So are we ready for number four?
Yes.
Okay. So how many of you feel your heart open, feel more loving and connected when the person you're with really understands you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that an incredibly powerful thing for you?
Very.
Okay. Yeah. So what stops us from understanding them? What stops people from understanding each other? What causes us not to do that? This is number four. It's a belief system, and if you can break this belief, it's very empowering for your relationship. Oftentimes in relationships, we think that understanding equals agreement. So number four is understanding does not equal agreement. And I'll give you a quick example of this. I worked at this company in Denver, and I was watching the president of the company and one of his managers argue about Bush and Kerry. And one was, I won't even get into who was for who, but one was really enthusiastically pro-Bush, and the other was enthusiastically pro-Kerry. There was a lot of noise, but there was zero understanding because they were afraid that if they actually understood the other person, that it might be perceived as agreement. Now, the problem is, unless there's understanding, there's no chance for movement, for change, for connection. So what we're trying to do here is to look at it and give empathy and understanding for the other person's point of view. Like if, and I think we may have brought this up before, but if both Kristen and I have had different dreams where we thought the other person had an affair in the dream, and you wake up in the morning, and what's the truth? Did they? No. But do you still have the same feelings as if they did? Absolutely. So if you go to the other person and say, God, I had in a dream that you had an affair, and they can go, oh, that's so stupid. That's not true. You know that's not true. Does that help you with the feelings at all? Not really.
No.
But if they give you empathy and go, oh, honey, did you feel hurt and scared and you're needing some reassurance and understanding for how our relationship is?
Like, what happens if they say, how would you know? You were asleep.
You lost me.
Okay, you're dreaming they have an affair.
Right.
You're asleep. She gets up and leaves while you're sleeping and goes out and has the affair.
Well, whether she has the affair or not, we can still stay connected through the communication tools.
I agree with you. I'm teasing you there. No, the point was you're having a dream. You're asleep. You don't know if she's there or not.
That's true. I don't.
But she is there.
Yeah.
Probably.
I'm teasing you.
So here's the thing. What I want to do is go take this into a level of reality. How many of you have kids on the call here?
I do.
Boy, not many.
Two.
Yeah. So what happens when your teenager comes to talk to you about things like sex or alcohol or drugs? What's going to happen if you have an agenda to try to make sure that they don't do those things or how bad they are? A lot of times they're not going to come to you with the truth and tell you what's going on for them. What happens with a lot of parents is they're afraid that if they have an honest conversation and really listen and try to understand the kid's point of view, that it will be perceived as if they're agreeing that it's okay to do those behaviors. Whatever behavior that's scaring you right now that you don't want your kid to do. And this is a way, when you understand them, then there's an opening that they may understand you, and you can actually find a way to meet both sets of needs, your needs and their needs. Because drugs, alcohol, drinking and driving, all of those are strategies trying to get a need met. And a lot of times we can find a much more elegant, when we get clear what the need is, we can find a much more elegant way of getting that need met where you don't have as big a price to pay. Drinking and driving, a lot of people end up paying a very large price for that. So that makes sense. Understanding doesn't equal agreement. How many of you have ever had somebody that was afraid of understanding you because they would perceive it was agreement? Any of you ever had that kind of conversation?
Yeah, I have, Paul, and I find that a lot of times arguments like that are not over who's right and who's wrong. It's an argument over different belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
The best example is the one you just gave with Bush versus the other guy. The guy that lost.
Yeah.
Because it's not a matter of who is better and who is worse. It's that I believe this one is more qualified and you believe the other one is more qualified. It's a difference in belief systems rather than in reality is one more qualified than the other.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I agree with you that by saying, gee, I see your point of view, they suddenly feel, hey, I now have the upper hand because you see my point of view, but I refuse to see yours.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
What I try to do is actually get, if I'm having that conversation of Bush versus Kerry, whatever that is, abortion versus non-abortion, you know, any of those conversations, it's not getting into the place where I agree with their stand. I try to figure out and agree with their needs. So you get the distinction, though. I'm not going to agree with their strategy. I'm going to agree with the need that's underneath it. If, say, someone's pro-Bush and they go, because we need to get rid of the terrorists, because we need a safer world, well, you know what? I can connect to that. I can connect to that we need a safer world and we need strategies that will work. That doesn't mean that I connect to who they're voting for. I connect to something deeper than that.
Huh.
What's the need? The need for safety, the need for understanding, the need for protection or way of life. I can connect to all of those and totally understand them. So understanding doesn't equal agreement. And what I try to do if I want to really connect with somebody, especially if it looks on the surface that we're opposites, someone's pro-abortion, anti-abortion, if we look at the feelings and needs underneath it, we can really listen and connect to them. So anything else on that, Kristen?
Nope, and we need to move along.
Okay, it's yours.
Okay. So number 5 is intimacy doesn't start in the bedroom. And we have a way of saying intimacy. It's into me see. Intimacy is seeing into the other person and what they're truly feeling and needing. So if you don't have that understanding between people, you'll lose the intimacy. So a lot of the intimacy in the bedroom is going to be attached to whether or not you're feeling understood, whether or not your needs are being met in the relationship. It involves risk, vulnerability, honesty. And another distinction that Paul and I were talking about last week was that without trust in a relationship, you're not going to have much intimacy. Because it's trust where you trust the other person to be who they really are and to support you, that really opens things up to intimacy. Anything else, sweetie?
Yeah, well, it's a cycle. Part of it is trusting the other person. Part of it is trusting ourselves and that we can handle any reaction that they have. So if we're being vulnerable and risking and saying, God, I want to quit my job. And the security of the family was based on that. And your partner freaks out. Well, no, we can't, you know, the house payments, et cetera. Can I handle their reaction? Do I trust myself to handle their reaction enough so that I can tell my truth, or am I going to spend my life miserable not saying what's alive and real for me? It's amazing what happens when we tell when we tell the truth and start having real conversation. And the more intimacy, the more trust, the more trust, the more intimacy. These things work with each other. And Kristen brought up another thing earlier, which is the amount of intimacy that happens in your relationship is in direct proportion to your ability to enjoy your partner's pain. I will say that again. Your intimacy level is in direct proportion to your ability to enjoy your partner's pain. And I will elaborate on that just a tiny bit. if you're in pain and you go to somebody and you start talking about like an upset at work, and they try to fix you and problem solve and let you know all of the things you should do, is what's your tendency? Are you going to want to go back to that person again when you're in pain in the future? Yes or no?
No.
No.
So what happens to your intimacy level with that person?
Guarded.
It goes way down. So think about it. If you try to fix your kids when they're in pain, what are they going to do? Are they going to continue to come to you with the intimate, tough, risky conversations, or are they going to go somewhere else? And it's the same with your lover. They're not going to come to you if you're the one who's always trying to fix them. So intimacy is that ability, once again, and you can see all these are woven together. You don't know where one stops and the next begins, but that intimacy is that ability to be with. You know, as Brian said, he's been listening a lot lately. That's a practice of creating much more intimacy and listening. And love is meeting your partner where they're at without trying to fix them.
Now, on the worksheet, we have an assignment for you to list three things that plug you in. And we wrote when at the beginning of the line, so basically you're writing out an observation. When my partner does X.
When the sponge is at the bottom of the sink.
Right. Sponge is left wet in the bottom of the sink.
Kristen, does that plug you in positively or negatively? Something that makes you angry or something that makes you happy?
Negatively.
I'm sorry, are these supposed to be negative plugins or positive plugins?
Negative.
Negative plugins. I never thought about that as a positive. I suppose it could be.
Yeah, it means you found the bottom of the sink and the dishes were done or something.
Yeah.
Well, I just meant that term plugging in. So we meant negative there. And then, sweetie, we have the directions that say find someone who does or has these beliefs and practice giving them empathy.
Well,
it just dawned on me that doesn't really tie in with the intimacy in the bedroom theme.
Well, actually what it does is it's just practicing flexing your intimacy muscle. And so if someone, it's almost like to go out and practice your muscle, if you're pro-carry or anti-Bush, or however you want to say it, you can reverse those if you want. Practice going out and sitting with someone who's pro-Bush and really listening to them and getting connected to what they're feeling and needing to the right down to the place where they go, wow, you really do understand me. And that practice will create much more intimacy in your bedroom, because if you can do that with the issues that really plug you in, and I just brought up some hot ones. There's the war in Iraq, there's immigration, there's abortion, there's gay marriage. Pick your choice, what plugs you in, and then go out and actively pursue people that have the opposite belief of you and try to understand them. Try to be with them enough that you actually get it. Not that you've got it like, oh, I see I'm superior to them and they're all screwed up and I'm enlightened. But to where the point where you go, wow, I get it. I get what your underlying needs are. I can totally connect to that.
And now you may not connect with the strategies that they're using, but whether or not you can connect with the underlying beliefs and needs.
Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes. Yeah.
Can you see how that would be just a little challenging, though?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how it would improve your relationship with your intimate other and improve the bedroom life. So, you want to do the next one, Kristen, or you want me to do it?
I can do it.
Cool.
Next one is baggage handling both yours and theirs. And this is big in relationships. There's three ways to recognize when you're dealing with old baggage. The first is that you're getting a response from your partner that's disproportionate to the stimulus. So maybe I didn't pick the dishes up off the table after dinner when I said I would. And if Paul just goes completely ballistic over it, it's like, hello, there were just a couple dishes. The world's not coming to an end. Then maybe there's something that's being triggered there that's much deeper than the dishes on the table. It may be appreciation. It may be honesty. It could be any number of things. But when you have a real disproportionate response like that, you can assume that there's something underneath what you're dealing with. Another one is if it persists for more than half an hour. Like somebody might get cranky and they'll be a little upset with you for a minute or two. But if it goes away, it was, I don't know, their blood sugar level or, you know, what you did irritated them enough. When something seems to be resolved and yet the pain remains, I bet you anything you're dealing with some old relationship luggage they're bringing to you from their family relationships or previous relationships with their partners. And then the last one of those three is that if there's a recurring pattern of this issue arising. So if I know that, gosh darn it, every single man I've ever been with has had money issues, maybe it's my issue, not theirs. Paul laughed. So those are three ways to recognize when you've got old baggage coming up. And then what's going to help you to get rid of this, we can work through these old issues of ours. We have to be able to identify them as an old issue and clarify what exactly it is, and that takes some work. You have to be able to sit with the pain that you're in and really look at it, not try to stuff it away or avoid it somehow, but really look at that pain and dig through your past and try to remember where it was. You remember first having it come up so that you can identify what it was.
There's another easy part of this. And this goes back to one of the mistakes from the five mistakes is storytelling. One of the things you can do that will help clarify it is if you can get to the point where you can tell your partner what the story is. I'm telling myself the story about money, or I'm telling myself the story that when you leave that in the sink, it means that you don't respect me and men have never respected me, or women, whatever. So it's like one of the things that will really help you get a handle on it is being able to clarify the story. And if you can't tell what the story is, if you don't have a hold on the story has a hold on you. And you're believing your story. Freedom comes when you can tell your story, but you no longer believe it. You're saying, honey, here's the story I'm telling myself, and you don't look very good in it. You're not doing too good in my story.
So that's the clarifying what the story is. And then the last part to heal that is through therapeutic listening. And what I have here are the three steps outlined by Carl Rogers and some of his writings. That to really heal people, you can use therapeutic listening. You can use giving empathy to help heal these wounds. But there's other elements there that are necessary as well. And the first one is authentic self-disclosure. So me just sitting and listening to Paul and just nodding my head like a therapist, or even, you know, what's even better is, you know, maybe make some notes as he talks, just enough to make him paranoid about what I could possibly be noting down, and then give him no feedback whatsoever. That would drive a person insane. For it to really be healing, you have to have the listener be authentic about what they're feeling and what needs of theirs are being met by listening. So there has to be that authentic self-disclosure on the part of the listener. There has to be an authentic caring for the other person as well. It's really hard to help heal if you really don't care about the other person that you're listening to. It just ain't gonna work. And then the last part is to give empathy, to really do the understanding piece and do your four steps to make sure that you're understanding the other person and that the other person feels understood. Those three things together will allow you to help heal these old wounds from the past. But like we said, clarifying might be the most difficult part of that whole thing. Last week, Paul went on vacation with me to visit my folks in Arizona, and we had a wonderful time. And then the last night that we were on this road trip, I got tired and cranky, and we were visiting some people, and they started bringing up a lot of stuff about money. And all of a sudden, it was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. My head spun in circles, and I was just totally triggered by all the money stuff. All of my old money baggage just came down on me like you wouldn't believe. And I couldn't even see it. I couldn't even see that I was in my baggage at the time. I thought that what I was seeing was reality and that Paul was a real jerk. I mean, just like, you know, an hour before, we had been deeply, totally in love. And all it took was for that trigger to go, and suddenly, he's a jerk, he doesn't love me, he doesn't help support me, you know. And it took a couple of days to actually come out of that and see that it was baggage, that it wasn't reality. But I was just imposing that on my situation right now.
Yeah, she still thinks I'm somewhat of a jerk, and I agree with her, but hey.
Kristen, let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
What happened that made you realize it was past baggage and not Paul?
I think using the top three.
Okay,
one thing, I realized it just didn't make sense. We had been totally in love and having a wonderful vacation, and then just suddenly he's, you know, the scourge of the earth. It just didn't make sense to me how that would work, and it just took a lot of sitting quietly in the car on the drive back up here, just kind of going over that. It's like, well, what could have triggered me? And thinking about when I started to feel bad. And, oh, yeah, it was kind of related to Margie saying this and this about money.
Okay, can I ask you a really important question?
Okay.
Did this realization that you came to have anything to do with Paul talking it out with you? And the reason I'm asking is very important, and that is, was there anything Paul could have done constructively to get you to that spot, or was it something you had to decide on your own?
I think in this case, I had to decide it on my own, because my blow-up triggered Paul, and so we're both sitting in the car, cups completely full, driving. You could just see the steam coming out of our ears, right? So I did that one alone and got through it. But if he had been in a position where, if he had been the Buddha, and he could have sat there with me and used empathy, given me empathy,
sure,
I think it really would have helped. And maybe I would have. One technique that we use is letting the jackals run,
mm-hmm,
and that is just saying all the nasty, mean things that are in my head to try to kind of figure out where the hurt was coming from. We could have done something like that, or just giving me straight empathy, I think, would have helped. But like I said, it wasn't available right then.
Okay, because what I'm trying to do is, for the benefit of all of us, not just when you're in that position, but when someone we care about is in that position, what's the best thing we can do? Do we just shut up and walk away, which is just going to piss them off and say, have them say, you don't care?
Right. No, that would create a disconnect.
Absolutely.
And so, well, no, you want to connect. And if you've got the resources, the emotional resources, giving them empathy, saying, I'd really like to understand what you're feeling and needing right now, or what you were feeling and needing around what happened last night, is really heart-opening and healing.
Okay.
So here's the key, though, is always take care of yourself first. In an airline, when they talk about the oxygen mask dropping down, who do they say put it on first, you or your kid? Always take care of yourself first, and I needed to take care of myself. I had nothing left. It was a long road trip. It's 2 days down, 2 days back. I had given everything I knew how to give, and I was empty or full, whatever you want to say metaphorically. I had nothing left. And so I had to take care of myself. Kristen had to take care of herself till we could get to the place where we could come back together. Now, a lot of the times, I'm in a better shape, and so I can hear her when she's in pain, and it doesn't get this. It didn't get it as large. It got big. It was hard. Or yeah. She's in better shape, and she can hear me. That makes sense.